Mystery Crate has been presented by ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Hey, Mystery Craters. Boy, do we have a great show for you. So good, in fact, that I brought our good friend and host of Supodity, Stu Gotts, along to hype this thing up.
Hello, Craters.
Always good to have your voice on this show. Stu Gotts, what is the biggest interview we could have in sports right now on the Mystery Crate?
Ooh, on the crate for the craters. I would say Clayton Kershaw.
That's a great guess, and we came close.
Really?
Tyler Hero.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
I thought we were just going to talk to the entire country of China.
Oh, no.
So you thought that was a good place to go to?
I thought it'd be a good get.
We go to Tyler Hero. You guys actually did this interview.
10-minute major.
Yeah, I mean a real winner. Chris Cody and Billy Gill went to media day, and if you listened to last week's Mystery Crate, you heard their unbelievable interview with Derrick Jones and Kelly Olynyk. People are still talking about it, aren't they?
I got to be honest with you, if we're going to keep things 100, as they say. I got so little feedback on it that I have no idea if it was good or bad. Like, normally, like, even this was horrible, I would take. But I was like, do I live, like, in a vacuum where, like, no one heard any of it? Like, it was so confusing. Because I never get no reaction to anything. Because a lot of people are like, oh, that was good. And then there's a lot of people like, oh, this is awful. I hate you. You're the worst. Stop talking. All that stuff, right? I get any of that whatsoever.
Oh, I felt the opposite. I got like 4 people that said that was all right.
Really?
Yeah,
4.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. And I looked at the metrics. Ooh. That's 100% of the people that downloaded last week.
And all 4 said it was all right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
All right. And Billy, you missed the hatred is what you're saying, essentially.
I missed anything, man. Like just I felt like I was in a
you missed reaction.
Well, give us reaction, because the Mystery Crate is kind of a bizarre podcast in itself, and it requires your feedback. So if you like the interviews that we do, great. You're in luck. We got 2 of them on this show.
Yeah.
Not only is Tyler Hero joining us, but so is Kevin Clark from The Ringer. He's an NFL writer out there, and we get into some NFL stuff, maybe. So Tyler Hero joined Chris and Billy out at Heat Media Day, sat down for a fun interview. Obviously, this dude has taken Heat Twitter and basketball Twitter by storm. It's a crossover event. People are on to this dude's drip.
Yeah, we talked a lot of drip, actually. He assesses our drip. We talked drip on the Heat.
He explained drip to Allison.
Yep.
Dripping it.
Yeah. Are you aware of what drip is, Stu Gotts?
No. You're going to want to get that checked out.
It's not that kind of drip.
Oh. So China's not coming up.
China's not coming on. And I'm really happy that we mentioned it a second time. Hiring can be a slow process. Cafe El Toro's COO, Dylan Miskowitz, needed to hire a director of coffee for his organic coffee company. But he was having trouble finding qualified applicants. So he switched to ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its technology identifies people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job, so you get qualified candidates fast. Dylan posted his job on ZipRecruiter and said he was impressed by how quickly he had great candidates apply. He also used ZipRecruiter's candidate rating feature to filter his applicants so he could focus on the most relevant ones. And that's how Dylan found his new director of coffee in just a few days. It's Stu Gotts.
Hey, I got
congratulations.
The job.
Congratulations.
Hey, thank you.
Yeah.
2 of the last 4 directors of coffee work with us, huh?
Unbelievable, huh?
Yeah. What are your plans?
I don't know. I haven't really thought about it yet, but I did get the job. Here's a plan that you guys should have. You need to get Dylan Miskowitz on the show. Get him on the Mystery Crate.
Well, I happen to know his director of coffee.
I can pull some strings and make it happen for you.
With results like that, it's no wonder 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. See why ZipRecruiter is effective for businesses of all sizes. Try ZipRecruiter for free at our web address, ZipRecruiter.com/crate. That's ZipRecruiter.com/CRATE. ZipRecruiter.com/crate. ZipRecruiter, it's the smartest way to hire. I actually had the South Beach Sessions ZipRecruiter copy open by accident, and I almost said the wrong web address.
Uh-oh, wow.
That would have been bad.
Wow.
Yeah. At least I didn't call attention to it. No. Here it is, an interview about drip with the biggest name in sports, Tyler Hero.
All right, we are joined now by rookie sensation for the Miami Heat, Tyler Hero. Now, before I get into the brass tacks and really hit you with the hard stuff, Your last name's Hero. It's a very, I feel like it's a lot of word plays can be happen with the name Hero. What's like the corniest, like, I'm sure you get, I can be your hero, baby. Like, what's like the worst thing like that?
I look at all the names or the ways they use my last name kind of funny. So, yeah. I mean,
I mean, I hear I can be a hero, baby, superhero.
Yeah.
Really a whole bunch.
You made news at the draft. Everyone, like, the soundbite of most drip here. That's kind of, like, been, like, your thing. Whether you wanted that to be or not, it's, like, what people have talked about a lot. And I'm wondering, you know, when you look at all your Heat teammates, what's, like, the drip rankings of, like on your team? Are you in the top three on the Heat?
Oh, yeah.
Right away.
Definitely.
Who else is in that top three?
JJ, James Johnson.
Yeah.
He's definitely, he might be number one.
Okay.
Trying to think who
Just
else.
Just looking around, yeah. How about Derek Jones Jr.?
Yeah, Derek Jones have drip or no?
I think he's like in the number five to seven range.
Yeah. I think
I'm number two.
Yeah, number two.
Number two. Who's number one?
James Johnson.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I can see that. Yeah. How's Goran's drip?
It's a little different than mine, but I mean, everybody has their own style.
How's our drip? By the way,
it's looking solid.
All right.
Can you explain drip to look? That's nice. Allison. Look, she's afraid of the camera, so she keeps running away from the camera because she's afraid of it. Like, she has a fear of cameras. See? Like, that's what's happening right now.
Allison, we're trying to talk to you.
But we were talking before. We're trying to explain drip to her, and she didn't understand it. So she said she just wanted to talk to you about drip.
I think it's like your style, clothes you wear, how you.
It's more of like an aura, right? Yeah. It's not like a specific thing. Yeah. It's just like an overall.
Yeah.
Like I feel like my drippiest thing is the brown shoes.
Yeah.
Is that drippy?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Anything can be drippy as long as you
own it.
Wear it. Yeah.
I feel like drip is something you can't really do, though. Like, if you don't have it, you don't have it. There's not. You can't buy it.
Like, I shouldn't have said drippy, right? That's not drip to say drippy.
Nah, you. Oh, no.
I don't know. So, we'll get into
I hear you talk a lot of Like, that's what I heard in Jimmy Butler's press conference. He said that you like to give it.
Well, no, he said he has some to him.
No, I felt like you talk a lot of when you guys are playing. Like, you guys go back and forth.
Yeah, I do a little bit of talking.
Yeah?
Sometimes.
Who's the best talker on the team?
I haven't really seen everyone how they talk trash yet.
Yeah.
So I had to get back to you on that one.
Yeah.
Now, as far as just a hokey basketball question to sneak in right here, do you expect to come in right away and, like, contribute, or do you just kind of feel in your way and you don't want to make any, like, guarantees like that?
I plan to contribute right away. I think I'm ready, so, yeah.
Cool. Now, we were asking all the other guys about this. He puts mustard on his Philly cheesesteaks.
That's not weird, right?
Yeah. Like, it's just like a threat.
I don't like any decorations to my food. I just like... Straight.
Steak and cheese.
Yeah.
That's it.
Steak and cheese.
You have a chef already or no? Derek Jones Jr. told us he has a chef, which
really
is like he's,
that.
You know, I mean, an NBA player now because he has a chef.
I mean, I have like my best friend lives with me. He cooks for me.
Yeah. So.
Like a team. Like, is he like your turtle? Do you ever see Entourage? Like the show.
Oh,
Entourage?
Yeah.
Like he's the turtle. Like, he's a friend of yours that you kind of just have around now and he does things for you.
Yeah.
Man, I wish one of my friends made it to the league so I could just be a turtle. It seems like a good
You don't want to actually be in the league. You want to be a turtle.
No, just like that's I bet you it's a sweeter gig because that guy doesn't have to wake up early, right? You got to get up and go work out. He's just like.
No, I make him get right up at me with me at 6 a.m. So
he's got cooked breakfast and stuff like that.
Yeah, all that.
Man, I need to get one of those.
What's the biggest like NBA thing that you're doing now that you're in the league? Like something that you spent something crazy on that you're like, you know what? I'm in the league now. I got to get this, like a car or something.
I bought my mom a car. That's cool. That's one thing I always wanted to do. So I bought my mom a car. Who else? I bought myself a car.
How did you surprise her with the car?
I had it delivered. I went and got it. And I just drove it to the house and I told her to come outside. She seen it. So
did she like it?
Yeah.
Here's the thing. I struggle just getting like normal birthday presents for like my parents. So like a car seems like a really stressful thing for you to get them. Like I'm there and I'm like, you know what? Let me get my dad like a hat or like a polo shirt or something. I'm like, does he like blue? Does he like that? I'd imagine you getting him a nice or getting your mom a nice car. You have to deal with like, what type of interior do I want? Do I want like these features, those features? So what did you end up getting her?
I got her a Porsche.
Jeez.
Cayenne. I kind of just, something that I liked, I was like, if she don't like it, I'll take it.
Yeah. You think that she'll tell you if she didn't like it, or she's like, you know what, I got a Porsche, I'm not going to say anything.
Yeah, she loves it.
What color?
It's all black.
I love it.
It's nicer than a polo shirt for your dad.
Did you say, this is yours, or did you say, what do you think of this car? Here are the keys.
I gave her the keys. Like, I told her to come out, and I just gave her the keys. She just drove it, took it.
Did you post her reaction on social media?
Not really. No,
it didn't happen.
No, yeah, it didn't happen.
Is that the best feeling that you've had so far, like as a professional, being able to get your mom something?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Other than getting drafted, yeah, definitely.
Did you have any idea you were going to be coming to the Heat like that night? Like obviously you meet with these teams, so like.
Not really. My agent told me that I wasn't getting drafted by the Heat. He said I was getting drafted 14, so like. It was weird, yeah.
And you hear everyone talk about the Heat culture, and it's like, I don't really know what they're talking about, but everyone kind of gets it. Like, how would you describe, like, just, like, what your expectations are for the Heat culture?
I think just being on time to everything, being a professional, being held to a higher standard than the rest of the teams in the league, and just really just hard work.
What's the draft like night for you? Because this is something you've worked for your entire life, and you're going, and you know I'm going to get drafted today. It's just a matter of where it's going to be. So is it stressful because you're waiting to figure out where you're going to play, or is it like just a general happy day because you know like today my dream is going to come true, like I'm going to be an NBA player by the end of the night?
It was kind of stressful for me because I didn't know where I was going until like the 12th pick. So, I mean, I was definitely stressed a little bit.
Yeah.
Do you have any good John Calipari stories? Like just a funny John Calipari story for us?
There's a whole bunch. The guy's crazy.
Can I tell you how old I am? When I went to UMass, he was the coach there.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. And it was really the time of my life.
Yeah, that was – he had a good team there.
He had an awesome team.
Yeah.
What's he like? Like because most people – okay – he will have people come in, and it'll be a one-and-done situation, right? Yeah. And everybody knows the deal. So he's kind of playing with the system so that he knows, I'm going to have you for 1 year. We're going to try to have a team win a championship, and then you're out of here the next year. Where a lot of coaches selfishly keep players around longer than they should, and they'll give them bad advice and say, you should stay in college a little longer.
Yeah.
Cal seems to just shoot it straight. He's like, you're here for 1 year, then you're going to the league, which has to be a cool feeling.
Yeah. I mean, Coach Cal, I think, different from all the other coaches, he – one, keeps everything real with those players. I mean, you can ask all the players that succeeded at Kentucky, which is a lot, you know, if he lied to you when he recruited you, and they'll all say no. So, I mean, I think, like I say, he keeps it real. And two, he doesn't need anything from any of us. Like, he's already got his own legacy. And so he's just here to help the kids. That's all he wants.
And is that why you went there? Because you knew this guy's not lying to me. I can trust this guy?
Yeah, definitely.
What was college like for you?
Fun.
Yeah.
It was definitely.
You do a lot. Like, there's a certain point where you realize I'm going to the NBA next year. Like, what am I going to be going to, you know, intro to English for? You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, was there times like that where, like, you know what, it's 8 o'clock in the morning, I'm not going to go to this class today because what's the point?
No, I was at every single class.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
What was your friend doing who cooks for you now when you were at class? Like, was he prepping for you? To like, was he cooking for you when you were at college too?
No. Yeah, we had our own little chef, but I didn't have a friend.
Cool. All right, man. Well, good luck this season, and thanks for joining us.
Appreciate you.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Thanks.
Sugats, I know you've been working the phones throughout that entire interview, but did you make any time to listen to it while you were not so busy handling director of coffee things?
Yes, I did. And here's what I think. I think Tyler Herro, great personality, but here's what I also think. Better player. He is going to be the rookie of the year. He is flying under the radar in terms of, I know everyone's saying Zion Williams.
You have Tyler Herro.
Better than Zion.
As better than Zion
I do.
Williams.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. The Pelicans made a mistake.
And you said earlier this week that Zion's the best player in the NBA.
I did say that. Damn it, Chris.
So transitive property.
That's how good Tyler Herro is.
Stop giving inventory of what I say.
Is better than Zion Williamson, wins the Rookie of the Year. That makes Tyler Herro the best basketball player on the planet.
Yep. Tyler Herro is the best basketball player on the planet.
I tell you guys,
yep.
Biggest star in all
sports. I mean, he went to ZipRecruiter. They were hiring the best basketball player on the planet, and they got Tyler Herro. How about that? Director of basketball.
Honestly, I'd rather win Rookie of the Year than MVP, I think. Because you only get one shot at winning Rookie of the Year.
That's true.
And you can win MVP as many times as you want.
That's an incredible way to look at it.
Well, you probably could win both.
No, you can, but you can only win Rookie of the Year one time ever.
Have any rookies ever won the MVP as well? Probably not.
In the same year?
Yeah, Rookie of the Year and the MVP.
No, I'm willing to call it. No.
Maybe in the NFL.
I should look at it, though.
But you're willing to call it a no?
I'm sorry.
I'm sorry to bring that up.
Any rookies.
But that's the only way, right?
Have any rookies won MVP?
Yep.
You know, Patrick Mahomes, in his first season of full play, won an MVP just last year. However, he wasn't a rookie. He was a second-year player.
Yeah. I found one.
Did you?
Yeah,
yes.
1969.
Nice.
Who?
Wes Unseld.
Ah, yeah. Wes.
And it wasn't just him. Both Wes Unseld and Will Chamberlain won the MVP award in the Rookie of the Year.
How about that?
Years.
Wilt the Stilt.
Kevin Clark from The Ringer is an NFL writer, and I'm a huge fan of his. I think he's got such a unique delivery and a unique style of delivering his NFL takes, and I'm really proud to have him on this week's Mystery Crate. Here is Kevin Clark from The Ringer feeding your NFL addiction, and hopefully we actually ask him some NFL questions and not just waste his time. Going to try something a little bit different on this week's Mystery Crate. Usually what we do is kind of evergreen, so you can go back and listen to it, but I have someone that I'm a big fan of on the line right now. You may know him from The Ringer and his Slow News Day video features. Mina Kimes has been on that program before. Kevin Clark is on the line with us, and we want to go through some NFL stuff, and we'll get to all of that, but we've been doing some research here behind the scenes in preparation for this interview, Kevin, and I found your LinkedIn.
Okay.
Did you know that you had a LinkedIn? Because I'm a little suspicious of the LinkedIn because you know how they have like other suggestions on the LinkedIn? There's like a tab here where I can click Max Kellerman, but according to this, he is a TV host at Telemundo in Atlanta. Ah. And it's weird because
Wait, is that not true?
No,
it's Max Kellerman I know.
It's like a mid-90s picture of Max Kellerman too. It could be a coincidence. And then I found Chris Broussard. And it says that he's an NBA analyst for ESPN. And we know that's wrong because he's not an NBA analyst. So we have Kevin Clark now on the program, we think. I tracked him down via LinkedIn. And it says two interesting things for us. Number one, you hail from the dough. He's from the dough.
That's right.
Now, we just learned this on the local hour. We have like a really douchey caller that calls us. His name is Hefe. I mean that lovingly. He referred to Orlando as the dough, and it's the first time I've heard that. I've heard it referred to as O-Town. Is this the first time you've heard it referred to as the dough?
It is the first time. So there's a couple of different nicknames that we have. But a lot of people use the area code 407. A lot of people use, and this is a stretch, and it goes back to the 90s, a lot of people use Jamlando for some reason.
What? That's horrible.
Yeah. A lot of people not do that. I don't want to be argumentative, but a lot of people do not.
No. I mean, like, in Orlando, it was like a thing in the 90s because I think the local rap station used to call it Jamlando. And so now, ironically, it is not uncommon to hear the term Jamlando when you're in Orlando.
Jamlando. I love it. I also see that you attended the University of Miami during the glory days of 2007 through 2010.
Oh, boy.
So did you witness the, 55-0, the Virginia blowout game at the Orange Bowl?
Yep. I went up to Gainesville with high hopes, and then we never crossed midfield. I was in the Patrick Nix zone, the Randy Shannon zone. I saw a lot of bad football. And I would say it was even worse than most people who went to school at big programs and they went through some bad years, because not only was I there for like the 2008 recruiting class that was supposed to just springboard us to number one, but people like Herb Street were still hyping us up as like a really big program. And so there was this constant belief that we were ready to beat Florida, ready to beat Virginia Tech, whatever it was, and just never happened. I spent 3 years watching some awful football, but mixed that with hope.
Kevin Clark from Jamlando here with us on the Mystery
Crate.
People talk about the water in the dough a lot. Is it as bad as they say? Because I've been there a bunch to Disney and stuff, and I've never really noticed it's terrible, but everyone claims that it's just the worst water.
Worst water.
I've never actually heard that before.
My man, finally.
No, but he's biased because you grew up in the dough, so Jamlando water is the only water. Yeah, well, that's the only...
There's no merita about the water. We all know how bad it is, but we can't tell anybody outside. No, really, I've never heard it's bad. Maybe I'm just used to it.
That's the thing.
I live in Los Angeles now, and I don't think the water's that great here, but maybe I'm just immune to bad water.
You grew up with that water, so that's water to you. Like, you don't realize what the water's like. But, like, when you're a tourist and you go to Orlando to go to, you know, Disney or Universal or whatever, you're going to do in Orlando, the water just has, like, a different taste, I guess, and, like, even feel. Like, it feels a different type of wet, if you know what I mean.
It tastes like home to me. That terrible, bad water tastes like my childhood.
It feels as though it's, like, bath water that I'm drinking off of someone's, like, body. Just
stop with this. This guy's from Orlando. He doesn't think it's bad water. The water's fine there. You guys are water elitists.
When you came to Miami, did you finally realize, there's something different about this? Why is this so crisp?
Yeah, that's the thing I realized is different about Miami was the water. It wasn't just like the incredible cultural experience and all the different people and, you know, the great nightlife. It was, I said, oh my God, screw all this. There's some great water here. That's what I said.
Now, on your Twitter bio, it says that you're a Wall Street Journal alum. Is that like the new Harvard email address? That's just going to stay there all the time, is it?
Yeah, so I put that in there because I started to do some less serious stuff like Slow News Day, where we basically, like today, Brian Russo and I just make fun of the movies on Delta flights. And I just needed everyone to know that at one point I was a serious journalist before I started just drinking coffee on camera. So, yeah, that will probably never leave unless I end up working one day in 20 years at the New York Times or something.
One of my favorite parts about Slow News Day, and we'll probably get to some football at some point with Kevin Clark here, but is that you're always eating in these videos. How do you decide what you're going to eat? We just happen to stroll upon you while you're eating, or is this very calculated?
The whole premise started to be that we were just going to read the newspaper. We're going to have a bunch of Starbucks stuff, even though Starbucks doesn't pay us to do this. And we were just going to talk about football. And then it turned out that nobody ever wanted to eat the Starbucks cheese plate. The only people who have, Arian Foster, I think, was the first person to ever, and that was like 9 weeks in, to ever eat the cheese. Shea Serrano has done it before. But it's mostly, it's there. And then halfway through, I realize I'm a little bit hungry because at the time we taped at like 11, which is between meals. So I just sort of, you know, midway through, just start popping the cheese in my mouth. And sometimes I happen to be eating during a moment where something funny is happening. And that's how it happens. It is, and I want to stress this, the dumbest show on the entire internet. So anything that happens there, food-wise, no one tends to notice.
Now, is this up for advertisement? Like, for instance, will one day there just be, like, Lunchables on the set, and that's the cheese plate? Or are you open to maybe going to a different coffee product?
I'm open to selling out, if that's what you're asking, yes. Like, I'm open to, like, some startup coffee being, like, here is a massive check, yes.
All right, so what's up with the Dolphins and this tanking thing? Tanking, am I right?
Well, yeah, so it's a great question. I think that they are, it's interesting, I wrote a piece today on how, on just the amount of awful teams in the NFL and how the gulf between, say, the Patriots and the Bengals or the Redskins or the Dolphins has just gotten massive. I think the difference, obviously, is that the Dolphins are building a strategy around this. I'd rather be the Dolphins right now than the Redskins or the Bengals. Because they've got the pick, they've got the cap space, they're trying to be bad. You look at a team like Washington, they're not even trying to trade Trent Williams, even though they can get a first-round pick. There's rumors that the Bengals won't trade A.J. Green for a first-round pick. Like, what are we doing here? I mean, the Dolphins found out they could get two firsts for Laremy Tunsil and help them pack. Same with Minka Fitzpatrick. So I think that I don't necessarily know if everything can come together in 2 years. I think that NFL rebuilds are really risky because the contracts are short, the careers are short. There's really only a 2 or 3 year window where you can take advantage because I think that so much of the modern NFL is just the idea that you can get these guys for cheap when they're rookies. Well, if you go beyond 4 years, the rookie contracts up, all of a sudden these guys are expensive. So it's really hard to turn around a rebuild like that in the NFL, but if anybody can do it right now, it's a team that's really, really committing to it.
What do you make of this season's narrative against the Browns? It seems as though the media and fans alike too, and the team itself, spent an entire offseason sort of hyping the Cleveland Browns up. And now everyone's absolutely reveling in the results. And all of a sudden we're unsure if Baker Mayfield's a good quarterback, even though he has a rookie passing touchdown record. I'm a Browns fan myself. Should I start letting some of these doubts that are affecting the take fest that is sort of Get Up and ESPN daily programming, should I start letting that just get to me?
No, you shouldn't. So first of all, we kind of knew this was going to happen as far as the slow start. I talked about this a couple weeks ago on my own podcast, but I predicted they were going to start kind of 2-2, 2-3, maybe 3-2, because it's really hard now to get everybody on the same page with the lack of training camp practices, lack of off-season training, especially with a new coach, tons of new faces in Cleveland. So I knew there was going to be a slow start. There's this weird narrative going around now that Baker Mayfield is somehow Johnny Manziel 2.0 or something like, you know, just another bust on the Browns, you know, trash heap. And I just think that's ludicrous if you saw him play last year and how good his release was and how accurate he was and how efficient he was. I mean, the ability to show that much talent over half a season, you can't do that unless you're good. There's certain mitigating factors there, like you can get injured or, the team can completely screw up around you. But normally, if you show that much talent, you are a good quarterback. I think at some point he'll show that form again. So I think that this is not, I think there's probably a lesson to be learned in the fact that the 49ers, we were hyping them up last year. They didn't show much in a couple of games. Then Jimmy Garoppolo gets hurt and they have a totally lost season. And now the 49ers are breaking out. Like, I kind of feel like the media kind of hypes up a team 1 year too early. Maybe this is the year they're going to go 9-7 in Cleveland, and the next year is the year they go 13-3. Maybe that's how it works now in the NFL. Remember, the NFL, we don't have a huge sample size because the sport basically changed overnight in 2011 when the CBA happened. So I don't think that there's a lot to go on with overly hyped teams bringing in a ton of superstars overnight. But, you know, I think the one thing we know is the offensive line is not as good as it was, and I think that we know they have talent. So I think that they figure out the line, they can get to a productive season this year, but maybe we're looking at 2020 for them.
Kevin Clark from JM Lando with us. Now, being from the dough, you are born into boy band fandom. Knowing your age, you probably know all about it, being from JM Lando. So what is the best boy band that is not NSYNC or Backstreet Boys? There was a litany of them in the 90s.
Oh, boy. O-Town, which was manufactured out of that, if you remember them.
Right, I watched the show, and even the show made me uncomfortable, because in 2019 that show never gets made, because entering the show, we kind of already knew about Lou Pearlman a little bit, but not enough for TV execs to say, we shouldn't do this.
Cancel culture was not up and running back then. So I completely agree with you. We would not have put that up. I think that it's really interesting to me, you mentioned the boy band thing, because those guys are just around in Orlando. And it's kind of weird. Like, you'll see back when I was in Orlando more, back when I lived on the East Coast, you would just see Jay Chiss Aze all the time, or like Chris Kirkpatrick. Oh, they're just around. It's in the same way, you know how in Miami, you just end up seeing athletes everywhere?
Yeah.
Like, you get to a restaurant and it's like, oh, there's Sean Marion. That's boy bands in Orlando.
We work at the Clevelander, and occasionally there'll be a pro athlete here, but downstairs at the Clevelander, we had a run-in with a famous boy band member. I went downstairs, and I locked eyes with somebody that kind of looked like someone I used to know, and I walked upstairs, and I was marinating on it, because we locked eyes, and there was like a sort of like, I recognize you, and I maybe sort of walk past you at a muted television and a sports bar moment. And as I was walking upstairs, I'm like, I think that was Chris Kirkpatrick. And I told I told everybody upstairs, I'm like, yo, go downstairs and like pretend like you're going to the bathroom and confirm this. And 4 out of 6 believed it to be Chris Kirkpatrick.
It was one of the creepiest days here, like by far, because there was like a steady stream of people. Like, it was a parade of people going up and down the
Katie
stairs
went down.
To go to the bathroom. And it was like nonstop. And then when people were unsure, they'd go down like 3 or 4 times. And the poor guy is just like sitting at a table with his friends eating right next to the stairwell. Like, no one goes to the bathroom as often as everyone was going to the bathroom. And then when they'd come back upstairs, like, the internet searching that was going on was, does he have tattoos on his ankles? Because the guy downstairs has tattoos on his ankles.
Confirmed, though, he did have tattoos on his ankles, and the Google image search confirmed all of that. So you're going with O-Town, but I was so bothered by probably their biggest hit because they rhymed all with all.
Oh, no.
Ooh.
Yeah, you can't rhyme.
There were a lot of problems with the boy band era as far as lyrics go. I mean, this was not the high point of music history. So if you're gonna comb through all the lyrics, all the melodies, there was some really bad crap in there.
Are you going with BB Mac or 5 with the F and 5 replaced by the actual number 5?
I would say 5. What was the band that had When the Lights Go Out? Was that Take 5 or 5?
Ooh, baby, When the Lights Go Out. I think that was 5. Yeah.
Okay.
We'll yeah, When the Lights there. Go Out was 5, but with a number 5 and then IVE.
Everybody a generation above me, so they would be like, I don't know, like if they were in high school when I was in middle school, I would say a good 60% of them tried to rebrand as a boy band member. Like, a lot of it was wearing like sweater vests with no shirt underneath. There was a lot of that among people who went to my high school before I got there, because they wanted to just sort of latch on to an O-Town type band.
I was made angry the other day seeing that Joey Fatone posted on his Instagram page that he goes around with Nick Lachey performing NSYNC songs. I mean, Nick Lachey, what is he? Yeah, you can look on Joey Fatone's Instagram page.
Man.
They're doing shows where they're doing Bye Bye Bye, and it's Nick Lachey up there. It's like, what is going on?
Well, it's kind of, that's happening in rock too. Like, Blink-182 has the guy from Alkaline Trio in their band now. And it's just, these are things in 2002 that would have just blown my mind. And now it's just normal. Everyone's just trying to get paid. It's fine.
Well, yeah, you can't fault the other members of NSYNC trying to get their money. You know every year someone fires off the group text, hey, is this year that we get back together? And Justin's just not having it.
Is Justin in the group text?
No, he's there. He's the only one that doesn't respond. Though,
yeah, he doesn't respond. Everybody has that one person in the group text that just sort of checks out. But they need to get their money, and they own the royalties to this song. So, like, why not go out there and perform it? And you have the added bonus of, oh, we'll dip into the 98 Degrees catalog, too, such that it is.
I've got Chris Kirkpatrick being the one with the Android that screws up the group text, making it green.
It's on the money. So Patrick Mahomes got injured the last game, and it kind of made me uncomfortable watching it because he looked genuinely hurt, but then his arm talent just sort of jumps out, and it's like, okay, I think I would take Patrick Mahomes if he were actually on crutches but could still just throw the ball. But because of that bad performance, and they were held, it's really back-to-back, like, non-Patrick Mahomey performances. Now Russell Wilson has sort of entered the conversation as the MVP favorite while he's just doing the same stuff that he's done since they started having to pay him instead of other people. So what do you make of now the nation at large finally paying attention to Russell Wilson in a way, and should we be concerned about Patrick Mahomes?
Kind of like Keanu Reeves, where for like 30 years Keanu Reeves has been a really cool dude, and then like the last 5 years we're like, hey, check out Keanu Reeves. Like, no, people just didn't appreciate him until just a short while ago. And that's kind of Russell Wilson. I said he was the best quarterback in football after 2015. And, you know, that ebbs and flows, and I think Mahomes has more talent now. But I think that he should win the MVP if Mahomes has a dip. You have to remember, Wilson was put in a pretty bad situation. Yes, Brian Schottenheimer is offensive coordinator, Pete Carroll is head coach. They want to play a brand of football that doesn't necessarily suit him. Whereas Mahomes is put in maybe the best situation for a young quarterback ever, with Andy Reid giving him the schemes to just get guys open, Alex Smith tutoring him, getting to sit for a year. Like, if Russell Wilson were put in that situation, he would have the exact same numbers as Mahomes and maybe a little better. I can't, you know, that's a tough hypothetical. But I'm glad that people are appreciating just Russell Wilson's talent. You know, it was funny. I talked to Richard Sherman about this a couple of years ago. He said that he thinks a lot of the guys in the Seattle team in general just didn't get enough individual credit because there were just too many good players. And guys like Bobby Wagner, it wasn't until they were alone that people realized how good Bobby Wagner was once the Legion of Boom was gone. So I think that that's so hard to isolate those teams, and now we're starting to appreciate just how good Russell Wilson is. And I agree with you. He's definitely a 1A, 1B MVP candidate with Mahomes.
I don't mean to veer away from the football talk, but I did some research on this 98 Degrees Joey Fatone situation, Kevin, if you're interested. So it turns out 98 Degrees was performing at Eat to the Beat, the concert series that's going on at Epcot's Food and Wine Festival. And they had a surprise appearance by Joey Fatone, who came out on stage and performed Bye 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 while the rest of 98 Degrees kind of sang in the background. And by the way, if you're back at O-Town at any point, this concert series, I mean, Sugar Ray was there. Who else is here? Kenny G's there. Ooh, Baha Men, October 18th through October 20th.
I thought Eat to the Beat would just be the name of Joey Fatone's tour.
You know, he has a hot dog chain called Fat Ones. Because his last name's Fatone, and if you break it up, it's Fat One.
What is your, being from Jamlando, Kevin, what is your favorite seasonal theme park attraction? Is it Halloween Horror Nights?
That's an elite question.
Wait, hold on. Don't answer that yet. Hold on a second.
Wait, we found more on this.
November 12th through 14th at Eat to the Beat, Joey Fatone and Friends featuring Chris Kirkpatrick and Ryan Cabrera.
Wow. I once saw a Ryan Cabrera DJ set at the Bellagio. And Grad Night. Ooh, did you ever do Grad Night, Kevin?
Ooh, Grad Night.
I did not. Grad Night was at Wet and Wild, I think, the year I was there. I forget the particulars of it. I did not do it. But I will say I did Halloween Horror Nights. Is Mardi Gras at Universal still going on?
Oh,
yes,
sure.
And that's one of the underrated ones.
I saw Mario Lopez as the master of ceremonies at a Mardi Gras parade there one year.
You know, that was a huge magnet for NFL players because it was in March. And so I met Dan Marino there.
Dan Marino went to Mardi Gras at Universal Studios?
The king of Mardi Gras one year, not like the unofficial king, like the guy who was just having the best time I've ever seen, is former Broncos defensive end Neil Smith. Just having an elite time. It was like 1999. He was riding high. And he was just having an amazing time at Mardi Gras. He was really living it up. I would say that Mardi Gras is also in the Epcot food and wine zone as far as just random acts, like you would see your Smash Mouth, Todd Rundgren, like that kind of genre would always cap it off. So Mardi Gras was good. Halloween Horror Nights was good. The Christmas stuff at Disney is always elite. I mean, it's real murderers, bro. You got to get the annual passes and let it fly.
Right, but then Epcot trots out like that flower festival.
Here's the thing that I've learned about Epcot. No matter what time you go to Epcot during the year, they have a food and wine type festival going on. So like even when food and wine is done, right, in Christmas time, they have like a Christmas festival and it's exactly the same as food and wine, except there's maybe like 10 less kiosks, but there's still the same lines. It's still the whole thing. So everybody goes to food and wine like, I need to go to food and wine before it runs out. If you wait like 2 weeks, there's another Christmas themed food and wine going
on. Wait, so like if I go to that flower fest, it's like a low key secret food and wine
fest?
You've
never been? Oh yeah, no. I actually prefer the flower festival because food and wine now, the way things are, it's so hot for the majority of food and wine that you really only want to go like the last 2 weeks of food and wine or it's like unbearably hot, right? But the last 2 weeks, that's when everybody goes, so the lines are insane. So Flower Festival is basically food and wine, except there's lots of flowers, lots of greenery. There's a butterfly garden that's delightful that you can go to.
A butterfly garden?
Yeah. Butterfly garden.
I am immediately changing my tune on this
I've been to that
festival.
Thing once. I let one out.
You let it out?
They have the little, like...
They have the two doors.
No, it's like a thing.
It's chains. It's like chains that go down, like metal beads.
You hold that chain open, I let them fly.
No, it needs
go.
To be like Outbreak, where you open one door, they pressurize it, and then you go in. You've never been to, like, a butterfly?
No, but this is like... What he's describing, this is kind of like not exactly like that. So like there's little chains and stuff like that so the butterflies can't escape. Butterflies, by the way, Kevin, I don't know how you feel about this. They live very sad lives because they only exist. Well, they only exist for such a short time. Like their impact on Earth is minimal at best because they're in the cocoon and then they become butterflies. And then like 2 weeks later, that's it. They're dead.
What?
Does that make you appreciate your life?
I mean, it makes me think that I should be more productive. Like, I've lived probably, I'm 32. I've lived close to, I'm not even going to do the math. Let's just say like 600 butterfly lives by now.
But I'm sure it feels like super long to them.
It was 2 days. It was 2 days. It's a lot more than 600.
Well, no, I think it's like 2 weeks. Listen, I'm not a math major, Kevin. I didn't work for the New York Times or whatever.
We'll get there.
Wall Street Journal.
I will say, they used to have this one Disney underrated thing is they used to have really, really C-plus list celebrities read A Christmas Carol or something like that at Disney. And so you'd go, I saw John Cicada do it.
Oh, lucky.
John Cicada.
When do you start seeing the C-list ones?
Yeah.
I think I saw Gary Sinise on a calendar there one time.
I saw him on the calendar too. I never actually saw him though. I think Jody Sweetin was doing one time.
Who too?
And Joey Lawrence. Joseph Lawrence. Remember, he wanted to be professional. Yeah.
Are you familiar with quinceañeras or no?
Yes, I am.
Okay, so I actually went to Gloria Estefan's niece's quinceañera, and John Cicada was the one performing that night.
That's the reaction we were looking for, Kevin.
I was wondering that same thing, to be honest with you. I'm like, come on, like, this is your niece, and, you know, I don't know if you're, are you familiar with Lilia Estefan? Lilia Estefan
should be.
Lilia Estefan is also Gloria Estefan's niece, and she's the co-host of El Gordo y la Flaca. I don't know if you're familiar with that show down here in Miami. Are you familiar with that show?
I am not.
It translates to the fat guy and the skinny woman is the name of the show.
Yeah.
It's a show that kind of, like, when it started in the 90s, was more appropriate at that time. Like, they interviewed people in hot tubs. Like, it was a crazy
Spanish TV
type thing.
And Gordo's dropped some pounds.
Yeah, he has.
Yeah, but is it going to be the thing where he starts ballooning back up again, sort of like the Rex Ryan?
Did you ask? I don't think they've changed the name. They can't change the name of the show. I think contractually he has to weigh a certain amount because it can't be a Flaco y la Flaca, right?
Yeah, precisely. Your thoughts?
I think this is great stuff. You know, I've heard, by the way, why Gloria Estefan may not have performed. I've heard rumors that some of the super famous people, like Paul McCartney and Jon Bon Jovi, they will tell people when they go to weddings and stuff, like, please don't make me. Go up with the band. I've heard that, like, secondhand sometimes. It's just like really, really famous musicians will both tell the band and the people getting married, like, don't do this.
Even for family members?
I don't know. I mean, obviously, did Gloria Estefan sing at all at that concert?
I don't remember that happening. I just remember John Cicada at the time because I was like, wow, John Cicada.
Was Gloria there?
Gloria was there and Emilia was there. All the Estefans were there. Yeah, no, she didn't perform. Last thing on quinceañeras before we go back to football or whatever. Did you know that Will Kane used to run a quinceañera empire? There's some confusion. He claims that he didn't actually plan them. I claim that he does. But he ran a magazine slash catalog of, like, quinceañera themed things that you can get.
Yeah.
I don't know how to respond to this. I've gone on to Will Cain's show a handful of times, and I did not anticipate that being a previous career for him.
Bring it up next time.
Yeah,
first question. Okay. Don't even answer the football question he's going to ask you. Just say, hey, Will, I heard about the quinceañera catalog.
Yeah, or you can go back to the Mystery Crate archives. I believe we spoke to him only about that for like 20 minutes. Yeah. One last thing before we let you go, Kevin Clark of The Ringer and Slow News Day. When you drink around the world at Epcot, and this is very,
this is very important,
where do you start? What's your attack strategy?
You know, I'm a huge fan of the Northern and Western European. I think that the Norway ride was my favorite thing in all of Epcot as far as that circle goes. And so I still have some nostalgia for that. So I'm just going to drink heavy, heavy beer from those sort of Scandinavian, Western European countries. I only drink beer, and that's my plan of attack. What about you?
Well, you have to start in Mexico, I am of that belief.
Or Canada.
But someone told us about the special back entrance that just drops you off in France, I like to start with a base of tequila early in the morning because, you know, you can't start from beer. Liquor before beer, you're in the clear.
The thing is, though, if you start in Canada, you can catch the Marty Short flick that they have going on, and it's very dizzying. So if you're too drunk by the time you get there, it's not going to be a fun experience for you.
But, Billy, part of this whole attack strategy is you have lunch at the hibachi place in Japan, and it soaks up all the booze, and then you can go continue throughout the world and really attack the UK, because the UK is one of the more fun ones. Although they say no chance whatsoever. No sports team chants, and try not to wear it like any like UCF color. Yeah, because they don't want like any like fight starting at the bar. And if you start talking about sports, you're likely to do so.
Huh. What? That's like what they have in England where it says like no team colors outside the pub.
Oh, wait a second. Maybe they're just trying to be authentic.
Wow.
Yeah.
Last time I did this, it was for my wife's 30th birthday, and I felt really embarrassed as a Disney employee doing this, but we got escorted out by people that were like in civilian clothes. And it wasn't my fault. It was my brother-in-law's. He was out of control. And I also did the thing where I was like, hey, I'll pay for your ticket if you let me paint your face in any fashion that I choose from, and I made him a princess.
How often do you do that? Because you told a story yesterday that you did that to someone to dress as a leopard. Yeah. So, like, it seems like your friends are like suckering you. Like, they know I can go to theme parks for free if I just paint my face a day.
Joke's on them. I get content for a lifetime out of them dressed like a panther princess.
And you also get free tickets, so.
Yeah. They're not aware of that. Yeah, but
Kevin Clark, do you do that thing where you toss the coin over your shoulder in Italy for good luck in the fake fountain? I mean, it's a real fountain.
I've never done that.
Wow.
I've never done that.
Do you consider yourself a lucky person?
To be completely honest with you, I do consider myself a lucky person. To be completely honest with you, if you're a local, Epcot might be the worst place to go to. Like, I am a bigger fan. Like, Islands of Adventure, especially if you're a teenager, is by far the best.
Oh, it's Erasmus.
You have the roller coasters. I mean, like, that's by far the best. I mean, Epcot doesn't bring a lot of excitement. You kind of have to be an adult to enjoy the alcohol and apparently the butterflies, whatever you guys are into.
Well, what's your favorite? I'm actually a fan. Fast passes have ruined this whole notion, and the entire thing has been devalued. But I loved waiting in the line and having to watch a special programming dedicated to those people waiting in the line, because I think it really gets your mind into you are writing the movie.
Yeah.
So, like in Jaws, for example.
The Jaws ride was the best one.
The Jaws
ride was innovator here.
Yeah.
They would just have like a fake Long Island newscast being like, there's been some sharks, but everything's going to be fine. And that turned out to not be true.
It's never true. It's never true.
Also, I always wondered why the same news cycles, like, you know, they cycled through. You'd see it multiple times in line.
Yeah, sometimes, yeah, that would really, like, you have to suspend disbelief, because if you're in a really long line, you're like, wait a second, this is supposed to be a live news program, and I've seen this part already.
Yeah, it really hurts the authenticity of the Jaws ride.
All right, if you could bring back any old, defunct amusement park ride from your hometown of Jam Lando, which is it?
Mr. Toad's Wild Ride, perhaps.
Really?
I also kind of liked King Kong, which is now, like, what, the Fast and the Furious or something?
Yeah, King Kong was awesome because it smelled great somehow. I'm going to bring back Dueling Dragons because I never understood why the line was just so quick.
Yeah, that was
cool. Yeah, well, it was because there were two roller coasters. They were dueling. Yeah.
I know, but it was so rad.
You had double the seats.
I know, but they got lazy. Kevin, they got lazy, though, because the whole appeal of the Dueling Dragons was that at one point both roller coasters would time out and you would see the soles of other people's feet. And then they just like, we don't care anymore. We've checked out on this. We spent way too much money on the whole line. No one even gets to enjoy it because you go straight to the front.
Yeah, I saw Eddie Murphy on Dueling Dragons like 20 years ago.
You did not.
No.
Yeah, he was in the front. People were chanting Eddie. Chanting his name.
Were you on the same roller coaster?
Allowed to chant. No, we were in the, like waiting to get on, and he was in the front row going forward.
He skipped the line.
Had his own coaster.
Yeah, he skipped the line.
That's not uncommon. I remember I used to go to ESPN the weekend because I was so obsessed with ESPN when I was a teenager, and you'd see all the guys, all the anchors and stuff skipping the line, and you get all jealous. I remember seeing Carl Ravitch skip the line.
What? Well, Carl Ravitch can skip any line, really. That's just the way Ravi rolls.
It didn't have to be ESPN the weekend. I assume I would let Carl Ravitch go in front of me.
What line did Ravi skip?
I don't remember. I just remember, so there's two kind of ways you can go about it, and if you have a pass, you can go in certain things. I don't remember. I mean, being with my friends and seeing Ravitch do it, we yelled Ravitch's name, and he gave a very nice hello to us. It was the best moment of my life.
Let's get back to football. If you could go to a theme park with any NFL quarterback, who would you pick?
Oh, wow.
What did you say? You want to do another pickup?
Who would you pick?
What? Okay, because it sort of tailed off there.
I did tail off. Thanks for pointing it out.
Who would you pick?
I think the answer is Aaron Rodgers, probably.
See, there you go, Chris. He pit Aaron Rodgers.
did you see any ESPN employees walking around with that giant like turkey leg?
I don't think so. I remember Sal Powell was just crushing vacation clothing during his time. Just like great.
Of course. Of course.
Great button-down shorts. I remember that much.
Did he have like a cardboard? Kevin, did when Sal Powell was walking around, I just imagine he had a cardboard cutout of the Philadelphia Eagles training facility behind him. That's the only way that I can picture him doing a stand-up outside of the Mushroom Kingdom looking like a training facility.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember because it was the first one. So it must have been like 2004, like July 2004. So I'm trying to piece that all. You guys aren't going to believe this. I don't spend a lot of time thinking about ESPN on the weekends from 2004, but it was quite a time.
Why don't you? I'd imagine that must have been so weird for people that were there because obviously Disney has like these, like Disney wasn't shut down for ESPN on the weekend. So you have the little kids that are getting in line to get like Pluto's autograph, and then you have someone waiting in line for Chris Berman's autograph.
Yeah, and then they had a bunch of like random people like Eric Dickerson just there. Or like I remember Keith Primo from the Flyers was there.
Get out.
I think they kind of just were anybody who's played a sport and wants to show up can. And then obviously the anchors. My brain was so broken back then that I was more excited to see anybody who's ever appeared on television. I was just like, whatever it was, 16, 17, and I was like, oh my God.
Oh my God, Linda Cohn is over there.
Yeah, it was kind of like that. I'd watched so much ESPN that I was just like, God, look, it's Brian Kenny.
I think you have like the top of the celebrity totem pole, though, running into Eddie Murphy at Dueling Dragons. One time I saw the Indiana Jones Stunt Spectacular and Mr. Miyagi from Karate Kid was just answering questions. Yeah. Jeez. Yeah, he was like, they had him up there and they always have the plant. And it's gotten so predictable, especially now when you go watch it, because no one wears Hawaiian shirts anymore. Yeah. And the plants always like dress like a tourist, but a tourist from like the mid-1990s.
Wow. That's pretty good. I'm trying to think if there's anything else. I saw Doug Flutie there at once at Disney.
What year?
I don't know.
What year did you see Flutie?
Like 05, 04, something like that.
Because if you saw him in 98, then that's like more famous than Eddie Murphy.
You're right. Right. He was at the pinnacle of the stardom back then. So, like, the big thing when I was growing up was the Princess Di went to Disney and her children, and it was, like, 1993, and the big thing was getting a photo of her because she was put in, like, tunnels and stuff so nobody could see her. And then the British tabloids got her coming down Splash Mountain, and it became, like, the biggest photo of the year because they knew, one of the photographers was like, Disney's hiding Princess Di from us, but we know at some point during the day she has to come down Splash Mountain. So one guy just did a stakeout at Splash Mountain until Princess Di came.
That's brilliant. Have you heard of the Cats of Disney?
I don't think so.
All right. So have you ever seen Vermin at a Disney park?
I don't think so.
Mickey.
I'm not counting. Well, that's the only one that's allowed. And I think it's very important to them. It's just like if you watch College Game Day, right? Did you notice what happened with Lee Corso when he made a selection? He picked Florida, right? He didn't put on the gator head. He just put on like a hat that said Florida. Why is that? Because you can't ruin the magic of Disney when all these other, you know, mascots are around there. You can't, they have to be real. All of a sudden you have Lee Corso putting on a decapitated alligator head. You're freaking out if you're a child. So they have all sorts of rules, which I believe the only mouse allowed is Mickey and Minnie.
Yeah.
So why don't you ever see mice? It would be a hotbed for mice at Disney. How awesome are they at eliminating vermin? And the rumor is, and I've seen Ryan Gosling speak on this, he's sort of obsessed with the Disney cats, that at night Disney releases like sort of like these mutant cats.
There's no way.
That are just absolute killers.
No, no.
That just eliminate all the vermin. Like these are like the SEAL Team 6 of cats.
I have not heard that, but I would tend to believe it. I would tend to believe there's something. If Disney thinks that something like that is central to the enjoyment of the 9-year-olds who go there, they will stop at anything to get rid of the vermin.
I can't stop thinking about running into Brian Kenny at the Hall of Presidents now.
I don't think he was there. Russillo and I went on a podcast a couple weeks ago and to talk about how much we loved Brian Kenny's Hot List in the mid-2000s. And so I'm sure if I saw Brian Kenny at Disney, I would have had an even bigger reaction than when I saw Carl Ravitch with Sal Pell.
Right. Kevin Clark from The Ringer. You can follow him on Twitter at @ByKevinClark. We really appreciated you taking out the time, and thank you for joining us here on the Mystery Crate.
Anytime, guys.
That was a good interview. What do you guys think of Circus Peanuts?
The orange candy?
Yeah.
Not a fan.
Not a fan.
I love it.
No, bad.
I think that and candy corn, they get a bad rap.
I love candy corn.
Styrofoam, really.
No, it's delicious.
The Circus Peanuts.
That's it. That's all I had. It's just...
Really?
I listened to that whole interview, and I was singing the whole time, Circus Peanuts.
Mm-hmm. Careful with that, huh?
So we wasted Kevin's time.
Yeah. Although I didn't enjoy talking about the dough.
You did not?
No, I did.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. No. I love talking about
Jamlando. You knew what used to be called Jamlando?
No.
We're talking
O-Town.
About Orlando.
What?
O-Town.
What about it?
The dough.
Really?
Yeah.
It used to be called the dough?
No, now it's called the dough. It used to be called Jamlando.
And now it's called the dough?
The dough. That's what
Why?
People are saying.
Oh, Orlando, yeah. The dough?
You get it.
It's not cool.
Hmm?
No.
Why not?
Because I'm 50.
He kind of proved you guys' theory wrong about Orlando water.
No, he didn't.
He was born there, and he said the water's fine.
No, it's first... because he was born into that water, so that's the water
he knows.
Nah. Yeah.
No, he's used to it.
Crappiest water.
These guys just can't take an L.
I mean, did you even listen?
Yeah.
Yeah, he lived there, and he's like, I've never heard anyone say the water's bad here. It's not like he just didn't experience it. He had never even heard of that.
But he's from the dough.
You don't think, if the way these guys talk about how bad Orlando water is, everyone there should be not be drinking it.
Oh, No. I'm with Billy and Mike. Like, it's terrible, man.
It's not the worst water in the world. Like, it's, you know, it just is different. You can taste the difference in the water. That's all we've said. Yeah. We haven't made it out to be this
horrible
thing.
We're not campaigning.
Thing. Yeah.
Like,
imagine you're born in Orlando, right? And instead of water, you only eat one type of pizza your entire life, right? Mm-hmm. You'd say, oh, my God, this is the best pizza in the world, and it's because you've only had one pizza.
But just because he's from Orlando doesn't mean he's never experienced other water. We're getting bogged down. It's fine. You guys, it's fine. You won.
But what
he's
Mike
wrong.
Has said,
he lived there his whole life. He doesn't know. He's wrong.
He's numb to it. It's all he knows is that water. Is it? That's it. He's from the dough.
So, Sugatz is here, as you noticed, and when he's not being a director of coffee, he's hosting Stupidity.
Yes.
Make sure to check out Stupidity. Yeah. It's a great podcast. It's already out. Sugatz, if the people want to go there right now, what do you have for them on Stupidity this week?
We had some fun with our friend Tony Buscelli, who is a friend of the show, a nemesis of Dan. He takes some shots at Levitar, which is pretty funny. He questions why he's getting married at the age of 50. So there's a lot doing there. And then, listen, I recorded a lot doing is what I said. There's a lot going on there. And then I recorded. I had to finish this thing off on Yom Kippur. It's the holiest day of the Jewish year. I'm not supposed to be doing anything, so I atoned for all my sins. I had a rabbi on, and I begged for forgiveness.
That's great.
He granted me forgiveness.
So wait a minute. Hold on a second.
I gave him a pair of Super Bowl tickets.
You're not supposed to be doing that, and you brought a rabbi on who's definitely not supposed to be doing that on that day?
I don't know what he was thinking.
I think a lot doing is fine, because have you ever heard of the phrase, nothing doing? Just the opposite of that. A lot doing.
You think I was fine?
I think you're fine.
I mean, Billy made a face. You didn't really flinch at all.
I mean, you didn't mean to say it, but I think you're fine.
Okay.
Did you sneak any food on Yom Kippur?
I did not. Come on. I didn't.
All right, the microphones are off. We're no longer
recording. I'm serious. I did not. Listen, it's ridiculous that for one day, like, I don't pay attention to the Jewish religion the other 364 days, but then on Yom Kippur, the day after Kol Nidre services, I become super Jew. I did not have, I'm serious. It's terrible. Because I should be observing my religion the other 364 days, not just one day a year. I did not have a morsel of food.
Right.
I maintained the fast. I did it.
But you also did a podcast.
That was, well, listen, I had to kill some time, man. And plus,
but
I'm unorganized.
You're supposed to not do that.
No strolls?
You
didn't come to work because you couldn't work.
There were strolls. But strolls, listen, strolls, you're not strolling unless you have something to eat after the stroll. I had nothing to eat. So what did I do? I spoke into a microphone. That's it. And begged for forgiveness to a rabbi, Stamwitz. I also had a pizza.